Just a heads up, this episode of Let's Talk About discusses the history of residential schools in Canada and includes brief mentions of genocide and abuse. So just a warning for those listening, if you are impacted by this, please discuss it with an elder or a mental health professional, or even just talk with somebody you love. Thank you very much for listening, and on with the show. Let's Talk About is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. I want to start with a quote. I want to get rid of the Indian problem. Our objective is to continue until there is not a single Indian in Canada that has not been absorbed into the body politic, and there is no Indian question and no Indian department. That is the whole object of this bill. This was a quote from Duncan Campbell Scott, who was one of the most influential and powerful individuals in terms of the residential school system in Canada. The residential school system, he ran it between 1913 and 1932. The whole system itself ran for well over 100 years, finally ending in 1996 with the closing of the final residential school. This is not a part of some distant history. This relatively, and in the history of this country, was about a year ago, more or less, if you're thinking relatively. And the residential school system almost accomplished its goal, almost, because it led to the destruction of culture, the loss of language, and the loss of family and community. It led to the destruction of Indigenous communities. Generations lost the ability or lost the knowledge of their cultures. They lost the knowledge of how to be parents, how to be children, how family should operate, how relationships should operate. It was infected by the abuse these individuals suffered at the hands of nuns and priests in residential schools. Some children never came home, and almost all, I would say all, came back changed. This episode of Let's Talk About is going to discuss the intergenerational transmission of trauma and violence. It's going to be a heavy episode, I'm sorry, but it's a heavy time. And I felt that it would be important to talk about this because of where the world is at right now. We have seen what's happening in Nova Scotia with treaty rights being called into question and being challenged violently. In the U.S., we are seeing massive protests and the continuation of the Black Lives Matter movement, another an entirely different group in North America, but who had very similar experiences to the Indigenous peoples of Canada. And actually, the docuseries Enslaved starts, I believe it started last night or starts tonight on CBC. I'll actually leave a link to that in the show notes because it's actually very fantastic, and it's something that I think every Canadian should watch. And it's produced by CBC, so it's free. So you really have no excuse. There's no paywall. First, I want to handle a definition because this definition is very important to the discussion that we're going to have when we're talking about the residential school system. I'm not going to get too deep into the residential school system, how it started, how it ended. All you need to know is that the residential school system took children away from their families, put them in buildings that were sometimes in the same community they lived in, or sometimes miles and miles and miles away, and subjected them to heinous abuse to condition them to be, you know, similar to the quote-unquote white Canada. One of our prime ministers actually said, the future of Canada is as a white nation. So this definition comes from the United Nations Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. This definition, so in the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. As such, A, killing members of that group; B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of that group; C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part; D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within that group; and E, forcibly transferring children of that group to another group. Now, we can, first off, according to the UNCG definition, and this is not something to be refuted because it happened, according to this definition, Canada did commit genocide. That's just a fact. I know you might argue against it. People are going to defend that, and that's your prerogative. But according to this definition, that's what happened. If you look at causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of that group, just look at the residential school system. Look at any of the violent quashing or displacement of Indigenous groups. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. That is reserves, that is the residential school system, that is a whole bunch of things. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within that group. We actually do know that there was a system of forced sterilization that occurred in Canada. It led to large court cases, led to actual, there is case law on the books. I don't remember the exact case. I have a book here somewhere that talks about that case. But it was that there were women, Indigenous women, who were forcibly sterilized in hospitals and clinics. Not just Indigenous women, but the people who were living with mental difficulties, people with mental health issues, the poor. It was a lot. It was a major component of what is called eugenics, to control who breeds and what genes get passed down to control the way a society grows. And then finally, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. This, you can look at the 60s scoop. You can look at the foster system in Canada. You can look at residential schools. They were literally transferring them from one place to another to be subjected to quote-unquote white culture. So with those in mind, we need to look at what this causes. What actually is intergenerational trauma, and how does it impact people, and potentially how do we break that cycle? This idea transcends just Indigenous peoples. It transcends the residential school experience, the 60s scoop experience, you know, children who grow up with abusive parents in abusive households, people who grow up going through war and conflict, our refugee population has seen and experienced things that we will never fully understand because we have not seen what they've seen. We've not lived the life that they live, where you're in constant fear of being killed, of being blown up by, or being shot for who you are, what you believe, or what you want to become. And we will never truly understand the impact the residential school system had on Indigenous peoples, because we're not a part of that community. We don't know what it was and what it is. Losing your language, losing your culture, losing your religious practices, losing everything that once made you you. Intergenerational trauma, as the name implies, concerns the trauma, whole or in part, that is transferred from one generation to the next. How does this happen? Well, you don't need to be quote-unquote traumatized or abused or undergo anything you would consider trauma to be a victim of intergenerational trauma. When an individual is traumatized, their outlook on the world and their experience and their reactions to the world are changed forever. Forever altered. The way they view things is now through the lens of the traumatized. Think of anybody with PTSD, anybody with depression, people who go through terrible, terrible things, and how it changes how they react to the world around them. The way that you react to a hand being raised, to loud voices, to the sound of footsteps outside your door, it changes you. And those values are transferred from one generation to the next. I use the residential school example because it is the most cut and dry and easy to see. Before the imposition of the residential school system, Indigenous families were just like any Canadian family. You were born, you had a group of aunts, uncles, grandparents, brothers, sisters, you had parents who loved each other. You were able to grow up having those things modeled for you, seeing how parents act with each other, how they act towards their children. You know, we take for granted the fact that we learn to be parents not by books and not by an education system. We learn to be parents from our own parents, from our own experiences of being children. And for the individuals, for 150 years, that chain was suddenly snapped. Children were removed from their homes, removed from their communities, and that learning stopped. For large chunks of the year, they were in the most formative years of their life, they were in residential schools, being taught by nuns and priests, being subjected to Catholic Christian punishments, having to speak English, not being able to speak their own language, not being able to learn anything about their own culture, actually being taught that their culture was wrong. As Duncan Campbell Scott said, he wanted to continue until there was not an Indian left. That didn't mean killing them all or making sure that nobody was genetically Indigenous. It meant that there was no piece of indigeneity left in Canada. So by subjecting these children to white culture and not allowing them to learn their own culture, this is how that was accomplished, or attempted to be accomplished. So children would go, and they would spend years in these institutions, coming back home maybe a little once in a while, or coming back for a few months before being dragged right back. So they were not able to be taught and shown and modeled proper parenting behavior. And in turn, young parents were not able to experience that. They were not able to practice good parenting behavior. They were not able to experience what it was like to even be parents. So a whole generation lost that ability to be parents because they were robbed of that. Add in the stress and the ills that were imposed on Indigenous peoples through the Indian Act, and the marginalization they experienced, the racism they experienced, the abject poverty they experienced, and that creates stress and trauma of its own. So these children would go through the residential school system, they would undergo abuse. It would be beaten. Some were sexually assaulted. And they were taught the whole way that they were wrong and what they were was wrong. So they'd go home to their communities. They wouldn't speak the same language. They'd barely have any understanding of what people were saying to them. And they would be walking around seeing their community, and in the back of their mind, they would have it in their head that this was wrong, that their community was wrong, that their beliefs and that indigeneity was wrong. And that can be deeply traumatizing for somebody. The cognitive dissonance that creates is insane. It's huge. So these people were then alone. These children who went through the residential school system were alone. They were not able to go back to their own communities because they didn't really speak the language, they didn't understand, and they had been conditioned to see their communities and their culture as wrong. Yet they were not welcome in white society, in the rest of Canada, because they were Indigenous, and Indigenous people were seen as wrong. They were not welcome there. There were laws on the books that were very abusive towards Indigenous people. So they were left on an island alone and among themselves. An entire generation was now displaced and conditioned to hate themselves. They were traumatized. And then, as people do, they have a family. And here is where we have the first generation without the first traumatized generation. They raise children, they're dealing with the mental health issues of their that have come up because of their time in residential schools, and because they were taken away from their families for a large portion of their lives and were not modeled parenting behavior, they don't know how to be parents. The greatest model they have are the nuns and priests who taught them in residential schools, so they parent like they were taught to parent by those people. The behaviors that were modeled in residential schools, that's not a real Christian family, and it's not a real Indigenous family. It's something else. So they, in turn, even if their children did not go to residential schools, the teachings that were modeled and conditioned in these people are passed along to the next generation. And suddenly, right off, that's where the chain is cut. Right there. Because, as many of you know, we become like our parents, right? You have the behavior modeled to you. You are conditioned to see that this is the way life is. This is the way parents act towards their children. This is the way parents act to each other. So that cycle continues on and on and on and on. Regardless of if kids were in residential schools or not. For 150 years, pretty much all of them were. Up until 1996, when those schools were closed down. Actually, a friend of mine, his mother was in a residential school. She was a fantastic mother. She still is. She was able to have a family because of the era she went to a residential school. She was able to actually have a family that worked and operated. And that's the important part there, is that it's not a death sentence. It's not something that can't be changed. It just takes a little bit of effort. So intergenerational trauma does not inherently mean that each generation is traumatized by the last. It is that the teachings of the traumatized are passed down to people to avoid. You know, a single mother with an abusive husband leaves and has children. She teaches them to be wary of men, to not trust them. And that changes for a generation how those individuals see men. Right? A person who undergoes abuse at the hands of the church. We know that there was, you know, they made a movie about it. There was massive abuse that went on in the Catholic Church. And those traumatized individuals pass down a disdain and hatred for Catholicism and the church. And that became a part of the ethos of that family. And that gets passed down from generation to generation. Trauma does not stop at the individual. It is passed on. It goes out and it infects because those people interact with other people. They believe. They teach. They interact. They become a part of a community. The way they act around other people is changed forever because of that trauma. The residential school system took away the ability to learn to be parents. It took away ability to learn how the parent-child relationship operates, how parents are supposed to work together, and what love is. Because for the most formative years of these people's lives, they were told they were wrong. They were told their culture was wrong. They're told that their skin color is wrong. They're told that their language is evil. And they had horrible behavior modeled to them, abusive behavior. And we suddenly think that by taking them out of that situation, that everything's going to be rosy and it's going to fix itself. So what do we do? How do we stop this intergenerational trauma from occurring? The important thing is to give it time. Because, as we have seen, communities are resilient. The indigenous community is resilient. The black community is resilient. They will not stand idly by and let these things continue. The way to restore, the way to step past intergenerational trauma is by breaking those barriers down slowly, by introducing better modeled behavior. So I mentioned the experience of an abused woman with children. I actually have a friend who they have a long history of women who have undergone traumatic circumstances, whether they be a husband who's an alcoholic or abusive, or a father who is abusive, or whatever. There is a fear and distrust of men that is put forward. And what broke that, and what helped at least one of the children move forward, was being able to be part of a community of good people who were not dangerous, who did not take advantage, who did not impose anything on them. And that's where I think the millennial and Gen Z generations have been so good, is that being outside the home more and being more selective with the people we keep around has allowed us to break free and explore, being more trusting of the people around us because they are more similar to us than they are different. They're a found family. And I think this is how you break that chain. You need to break that chain. Whether it is parenting classes or just improving the conditions, modeling proper behavior and exposure to that proper behavior is important. You cannot hide from that trauma. You need to embrace it. You need to, if somebody has been traumatized, if somebody has undergone mental health issues or difficult situations, or is a refugee and is deeply traumatized, seeking help is one of the best ways to combat that. Because if you can sit with your trauma and work past it, then you are set free. Seeing a psychologist, a therapist, working through it with them, going in, if you're indigenous, seeing an elder and speaking with them, reconnecting with your community and the love that is there. Even acknowledging it yourself and exploring it, reading on trauma and how to work past it, having a community of loving people around you, friends and family who care about you. If you yourself can walk past that trauma, learn to live with that, then you are able to better move forward in life. I actually wrote a whole book about it, about trauma and what happens if we let our trauma fester and we do not acknowledge the wrongs and attempt to redress them. Even just acknowledging them makes the difference. It's about a character who had an abusive family, who then was in an abusive relationship and committed some very bad acts. And the whole book is about that person acknowledging, finally being forced to confront and acknowledge their own trauma and the impact that it had on their life, and seeking change. That's kind of my whole thesis on this issue. Acknowledgement, healing, and moving forward. So intergenerational trauma is a complicated issue. It does not show up always in bruises and scars. It does not always show up in violence. Sometimes it shows up in different ways. Being wary and untrustworthy or untrusting of people who are different than you. Hatred of institutions that have wronged you. Or being angry or not having the competencies and an understanding that would have occurred otherwise. For the individuals who went through the residential school system, it was having terrible abusive behaviors modeled to them as correct, leaning on those modeled behaviors to teach them how to be parents because they were not allowed to learn that from their own parents, and having that passed down generation to generation to generation. And we as a country have begun to acknowledge that, which is great. That's why I have that acknowledgement at the start of this show. And I think as we move on, we need to do more. Healing is important. Working at the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation, I learned this, that healing is the most important part, or one of the most important parts of reconciliation. Indigenous communities healing themselves, restoring themselves, returning back to health and security in who they are and how they operate is incredibly important. And we're starting to see that. But we have a long way to go. So if you take anything away from this episode, is that if you are traumatized, if you're experiencing trauma, or are in a situation where you have family members, or you are in the throes of intergenerational trauma, you are not alone. You are not alone. And there are people around you who love you and will help you. And that will do it for today's episode. It was another heavy one, but thank you very, very much for listening. I'm Jason. You have been the audience. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, you got some music and fantastic shows coming your way just after this one. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. Download, recommend to a friend, rate, do whatever you need to help this podcast spread. It means the world to me. But once again, I've been Jason. You've been the audience. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week.